This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and it's great to be back in New York after a week of reporting in Puerto Rico. We begin this hour with new allegations against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Just as a date was set for Christine Blasey Ford to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee, The New Yorker magazine came out with a second allegation against the judge. And a warning, this segment will contain some graphic content. The piece from Jane Mayer and Ronan Farrow claims that Deborah Ramirez recalls being at a party as a freshman at Yale University with Kavanaugh. And according to Ramirez, they were both drinking when Kavanaugh exposed himself and thrust his penis in her face. Other students called for her to kiss it. She says she was mortified and pushed him away.
She remembers vividly Brett Kavanaugh laughing at her during this incident, pulling his pants up afterwards.
That was Farrow speaking on CNN today. Deborah Ramirez is now calling for an FBI investigation. Kavanaugh himself denies the incident, and in a statement he wrote, quote, "The alleged event from 35 years ago did not happen. The people who knew me then and know that this did not happen and have said so. This is a smear, plain and simple. I look forward to testifying on Thursday about the truth and defending my good name and the reputation for character and integrity I have spent a lifetime building against these last-minute allegations." With us now is Karin Demirjian, a congressional reporter for The Washington Post. Hi, Karin.
Hi, good to be with you.
Lots to unpack here today. Let's start briefly with the Deborah Ramirez story in The New Yorker, because she says that she and other students were drunk. And while she admits this and says that there may have been some gaps in her memory, she's pretty confident in her claims. What's been the response in Washington?
Well, the response has been that it has basically taken what seemed like a done deal, that we were going to get to Thursday and hear from Christine Blasey Ford and from Kavanaugh about those allegations, back to kind of square one, because now there's new allegations. And so it's Senate Democrats are saying, hold up, we've got to stop everything. We can't be just doing Thursday and go to a confirmation vote. We need time to investigate the allegations, the new ones that have come to light. And of course, Republicans have kind of wanted to push through this the whole way to be able to get to a confirmation vote for Kavanaugh. The more time this takes, the more people that come out with allegations, the more complicated that gets. And so you've basically got instability now, again, that has been rife in D.C. over Kavanaugh's nomination since Christine Blasey Ford did come forward, but seemed to actually get resolved on Sunday, kind of fall apart again. And now we have Democrats saying we should have had an FBI investigation into Ford's allegations. We need to look into this stuff before we push ahead.
Well, let's talk about the Blasey Ford allegations. This was, as you mentioned, Kavanaugh's first accuser. She is set to testify on Thursday. And I want to play a clip from South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who is a member of the Judiciary Committee. And this was him on Fox News Sunday before the Deborah Ramirez article came out.
What am I supposed to do? Go ahead and ruin this guy's life based on an accusation. I don't know when it happened. I don't know where it happened. And everybody named in regard to being there said it didn't happen. I'm just being honest. Unless there's something more, no, I'm not going to ruin Judge Kavanaugh's life over this.
There's lots of talk about ruining lives, particularly in this era of the Me Too movement. Karin, what's your reaction to Graham's comments there?
Well, I'm not surprised that he made them. Lindsey Graham is at many points a straight shooter and just kind of says what everybody's thinking but doesn't want to say because it's not very diplomatic. There are a lot of people on both sides of the aisle, and I'm speaking of senators, who are not going to change their minds, who have already made up their minds about who's right and who's wrong, or at least about how they're going to vote on Kavanaugh's nomination, and nothing that happens Thursday is going to likely change that at all. This is all going to come down to a core group of moderate Democrats, moderate Republicans in the middle, some of whom were swayable before, perhaps a few more of whom are swayable now because of the shocking nature of the allegations that are coming out against Kavanaugh. But in the bigger picture, yeah, the question of life ruining has been in quite a football going back and forth, with people saying, look, the accused people have rights too, and by raising these allegations when you couldn't actually prove them in a court of law, you are keeping somebody from achieving what they might otherwise be able to achieve. The flip side of that is, of course, the trauma on the inflicted person who potentially, these are allegations, but if they are true, it says something about the severity of them, that it took a long time for them to come out. What about that style of life ruining? And that's the bigger conversation that we've been having all year, really, as we've been seeing women come out accusing powerful men of having sexually abused, harassed, any number of things, and having their reputations take the beating that they potentially deserved. Whether that's actually applicable in the circumstance, that remains to be seen, because these are allegations that will be vetted to some extent, at least on Thursday. But that's the social and the political environment in which this discussion about Kavanaugh is taking place.
Well, and also you mentioned, you know, I mean, these are allegations and these are not, we are not in a court of law. We're not discussing any criminal charges here. But this is essentially a job interview for one of the most important positions in this country. Why is it that Republicans are in such a rush to confirm this nominee? I mean, are they concerned that if Kavanaugh does not get confirmed, that they'll run out of time with the midterms right around the corner to get somebody else in the queue?
Well, that may now be another concern, given that there's additional allegations. There is not that much more time that Congress is supposed to be in Washington before the midterms come about. But look, Republicans have wanted to push ahead with Kavanaugh. He seemed to be somebody with a sterling reputation, much like Neil Gorsuch, who kind of sailed through and even got the votes of several Democrats for his nomination. But the longer this goes on, the more that Ford and others have time to try to substantiate their allegations, or at least convince senators that even if they can't prove it, that their gut is in the right place and that senators kind of just move over to finding them more credible, the more difficult it becomes to confirm Kavanaugh. And yes, the start of the Supreme Court session is in October. You want to be able to have somebody, if you are the president and his allies, to be able to have one of your picks that's on the bench at that point, because there's just some fairly important cases coming up. Also, Kavanaugh is fairly young, so you're talking about, you know, installing somebody who could turn the court fairly conservative for another generation. And, you know, he was the first pick in terms of the list of people that Trump said he would choose his Supreme Court nominees from. Going down the line, it could become more complicated to confirm others.
Has this process shaken Americans, the faith, if any, if whatever's left that Americans have had in our Supreme Court nomination process? I'm thinking more specifically because of some of the assumptions that not just, you know, folks in our Congress, but also the media has sort of assumed that this man will be confirmed, that Kavanaugh is a shoo-in. Has this actually shaken any of that? Has this actually had an impact on people maybe not assuming that he'll be confirmed?
Yeah, I think to some extent it has. I mean, look, again, when this first came out, it wasn't totally clear if it would affect him, but clearly Kavanaugh is, you know, to some extent doing his due diligence because he must be worried that this is not just going to roll away. Yeah, the confidence that was surrounding Kavanaugh is not ironclad anymore. I think it really depends on how things go Thursday, how each one of them performs. Because as much as this is going to come down to the case that they make, like we were discussing before, there isn't really enough factual evidence to prove this in a court of law, although you could still try. I mean, the statute of limitations in Maryland doesn't exist for this sort of crime, and so there potentially could be an attempt to prove that. But
well, that was going to be another question. Like, could Kavanaugh potentially face criminal charges at any point here? Because of the statute of limitations?
Potentially, but that depends on what Blasey Ford decides to do down the line, and that's not what's at issue for Thursday. What's at issue for Thursday is how are they both going to make their case? How are people going to feel watching them? How are senators going to kind of just judge in their feelings, in their gut, who is probably right here? And that's what's going to affect the votes in the short term, because while Democrats have been arguing for, let's have the FBI investigate, and they could just do it in a few days, that's still probably not going to be the final arbiter of everything, because it has been so long and because you are going to have pushback from Kavanaugh's allies. It's not like it's going to all get magically resolved if the FBI looks into this. It will still come down to a question of how do people feel like they should be voting on this at the end, because if they get through Thursday and Kavanaugh stays in this nomination race, then there's eventually going to be a confirmation vote, and then it's just going to come down to a very close margin, but do enough Democrats and Republicans feel really uneasy about this, the ones in the middle are the ones I'm referring to, so that he can't quite break that threshold. And then that's a real serious message about, you know, how things have changed. The comparison is always 1991, Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas's confirmation process to get to the Supreme Court. Now, the facts are not exactly the same, but it's similar enough, and that the memory of having a woman sit in front of a all-male, all-white panel, and not the Democrat half is more diverse than that now, but the Republican half is that today as well, is just saying, look, have we come anywhere in 27 years? of course, Republicans are saying that's really not a fair comparison. We should be judging it based on the merits, and they don't believe the merits are there to actually derail Kavanaugh's nomination.
Well, and the other issue, you know, you mentioned Anita Hill sitting there and testifying. I think, you know, there's obviously a question as well about race in that equation and what that brought up in the Anita Hill hearings. And my question to you, though, is given that history and given what's happening right now and given the context, the broader context around this Me Too movement, if you will, if Kavanaugh's confirmed, what could that potentially signal to American women?
That's the big question, right? Because we're talking about 2018 being the year of the woman again. And that's not just in terms of the number of female candidates who are running for office, but how are women going to vote? And what will they if Kavanaugh is confirmed, if he's confirmed and everybody was very, very sensitive to Ford, okay, maybe that won't affect the vote too much. But if she ends up getting hammered unfairly, people feel, or they feel like the vote was kind of set up at the beginning. And again, it depends on how credible, how believable Ford ends up being, because the nation's going to be watching on Thursday. And that includes a lot of women voters who are considered a key swing block. How they feel about how this transpired could matter a lot in the midterm elections, which are right around the corner.
Karin Demirjian is a congressional reporter covering the judiciary for The Washington Post. Thanks, Karin.
Thank you.
On Friday, The Takeaway's Amy Walter spoke with Jenny Willoughby, the ex-wife of former White House staffer Rob Porter, who she says abused her emotionally and physically. Willoughby told us that going public with her story in the midst of a D.C. media storm allows her to relate to Dr. Ford and what she's going through.
I'm reliving it through what people are doing and saying about her. I'm reliving it watching the political pundits just make, in my opinion, really dehumanizing and insensitive comments as though she is some sort of political tool and not a human being who has been traumatized and who is upending her entire life in order to come forward and tell the truth.
We've also been hearing from many of you about your stories of coming forward after harassment or assault and what's at stake when deciding to do so.
I shared my experience with sexual assault via Twitter. I was inspired by a disc jockey that was assaulted when he was really young. And like I said, it inspired me to finally say that it happened to me too.
My name is Laura, calling from Los Angeles. My story took place when I was 18. I was actually harassed and assaulted by the owner of the company that I worked for. I didn't tell anyone, including my close family, for a very long time. I was hoping to be able to advance and move forward in the company, and I knew that if I said anything, my chances of that would be slim to none. So I kept it to myself, and, you know, life goes on.
I'm Esther, calling from Dallas, and I shared my story with my family so I could get their support. I guess I risked my reputation in their eyes, but I also risked suffering in isolation, and I consider that a risk I was willing to take.
Thank you so much for sharing your stories. And if you'd like to weigh in, call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.